Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Oh, boy. He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? Dada.
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast, brought to you in video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA to get $50 in free lineups when you play a $5 lineup. I am Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Tuesday evening by Raj Topalu to break down the upcoming Lakers-Rockets series. Raj and I were texting in advance of this episode, and let's just say Raj is confident. despite having a close personal friend on the Houston Rockets roster in Kevin Durant,
right?
Raj was, you know, speaking a little reckless in the text exchange that we had today. Raj, how you holding up, bud?
I'm good. A couple things before we start. I was listening to you and Harrison. I forgot what day it was, but I think I was in. You were telling Harrison my plan of going to San Francisco to watch this game, and he had the most disappointed dad face I've ever seen in my life. Just a, like, you know, you want to tell them something, but you can't really tell them. So he just had a, oh God. And so I was kind of cracking up at that. And number two, I'm following Ryan West, which I find just absolutely insane. The guy whose dad is the actual logo, like not All-Star, not, you know, some NBA championships. The guy literally anytime it says NBA, it contractually has his father on it. I'm following that guy. Nice. A great Tuesday for me.
That's why I am not solo, Raj.
That's fair. Totally fair. Totally fair.
I hope you guys have checked out that episode. It was a really fun conversation with Ryan. We hit on all kinds of stuff. Jerry as a father, kind of his lasting impact on the game, the Lakers drama while Jerry and Ryan were there together, Ryan's current Detroit Pistons team, which finds itself the number one seed going into and actually is going to play. I'm watching the Hornets Heat game off to the side. That is Ryan West's current organization's upcoming matchup. So, he was great, and he was given how busy he is going into the playoffs with the upcoming release of this documentary. I was really grateful to even get 25 minutes, and then actually the show continued after the show. And it was funny because, you know, he and I were just kind of shooting the shit about basketball and stuff like that. And his like handlers for this tour that he's doing for this documentary, like, messaged me after the site. He's like, "Hey man, like, we got to get running to his next thing." I was like, "Oh shit. Yeah, totally." Like, so, super nice guy, Ryan West. And I hope you guys enjoyed that. And yeah, Raj, good luck filling those shoes.
Yeah. Like, tough shoes to follow here.
To make sure you don't miss any episodes like that, make sure you guys are subscribed to the channel. Make sure you guys are hitting the like button, because the bigger the channel gets, the more opportunities we get like that. We are also on TikTok. I always forget to mention TikTok. And then always look out for Raj's content, my content on Offside, where he and I will be in the chat for all of this upcoming series. So Yeah, good stuff all around. Raj, Lakers Rockets is coming up.
Yes.
And I, while acknowledging it's the team that I wanted to play between them and the Minnesota Timberwolves, and while acknowledging that, you know, I think there are more avenues, I think, to winning this series than most, like, minus 500 or plus 500 type underdogs that, you know, as the Lakers currently are. I still think there's a reason that the Lakers find themselves,
sure,
as, you know, plus 500 type underdogs. So let's go ahead and get our predictions out on the record right from the get, so that people, okay, can clip them. They can dunk on us, or they can praise us, however you want to do this. Sure. I say Rockets in six, but, okay, if this goes to seven, I'll take the Lakers in the game seven. Where are you at?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, so this is very easily might be me just lowering the rim so anyone can come and dunk on this, which is totally fine. I'm okay with
that. Standing there like DJ and Benga. Like, let's go.
Gotta get dunked on, right? That's the whole part of this game. I have Lakers in six. And again, there is a chance, you know, a more than probable chance that the Rockets can come out and just sweep the team. They have the higher talent edge, right? They have more players available for them. They have a, you know, they're just in a better position talent wise. But I do think the Lakers have certain advantages that, you know, they come in with. I do think the offensive numbers post All-Star break, Anthony, I'm not sure you can look at any of that with the Lakers, right? They're missing 67 points combined between Luke and Austin and 14 assists. There's just no amount of players that can make up for that on their bench. But I do think the defense is legit real. They moved up to 14th in defense. They were 23rd before the break, moved up almost 10 spots on that end. I think that is something that they're all in sync with, even if the offensive looks ugly. And that offense is going to be LeBron James. Now, how much can he do that? Can he do that for a full playoff run? I have no idea. But watching him, he looks as playoff ready as I've seen him. This is, I believe, the healthiest he's been going into the postseason. I'm going to knock on wood for that, but he looks the healthiest I've seen in a long time, and he looks ready to go. And how long, again, he can do that, I'm not sure, but I think in 6-7 games, he can pull out, you know, he can go into his bag and pull out the best of LeBron James. He has shooters around him, and the defense is going to be a struggle at times, but yeah, I'm going Lakers in six. You're going Lakers in seven is what I'm going to say. Is basically what you put out there. I'm going to add that to my to the end of the, going to stack that to the end of this. But yeah, I have Lakers in six. But I think this all depends on game one. You got to get game one to me in this series to kind of put that, you know, take that belief from the Houston Rockets. And I do think they are a team that you can take the belief from, which is why I hope that they played Houston over a team like Minnesota. So that's kind of my overall reasoning for the pick.
Yeah, a lot of good points made there, honestly. Like, I think that, like, the kind of defense that the Lakers have been playing, like the ways that the Lakers have been successful recently, actually lend themselves really well to this Houston matchup, right? Lakers can go more zone. They can put two on the ball more against a team that doesn't have very good facilitators. I am nervous about the rebounding and the athleticism, sure, deficit there, you know, in such a way that, like, even if the Lakers get that initial stop, will Houston just get enough possessions, generate enough possessions on the offensive boards to make up for some of those tactical advantages that the Lakers have here? I'm nervous about a series where J.J. Redick is going up against Ime Udoka, who is significantly more proven in the postseason. Even if he might actively hate this Rockets roster, and their only point guard on the roster, he just hates Reed Shepard. So like I'm with you. Like I truly understand the optimism here, and I also understand, like, this is the thing that I think is completely lacking in discourse about basketball or sports. But I'm obviously more involved in basketball discourse. There's like this inability or disinterest in seeding where the other side of a conversation might be coming from. And I noticed it a lot more recently with like the MVP one. It's so like up in the air. The race is so incredible that I actually think a lot of people are actually granting the opposite side to wherever they stand on. But like, I've actually really seen it in the rookie of the year debate where like con people are saying like, fuck Cooper Flagg, our guy's the guy. And
right.
Cooper Flagg people are like, how dare you? I think I on this show told con supporters to never mind. But with this one, I completely understand why, like on ESPN, right? I saw that like, you know, they make their analyst picks going into right. all these series. And I think only Mark J. Spears was saying that the Lakers would win this one, including Dave McMenamin, right? Who said Heat, I believe, in six. I always wonder how like a local like beat reporter is supposed to handle that one, right? Because like if Dave says Lakers and whatever, he's going to be called a homer. If he says Rockets and whatever, then his own readership and like audience is going to be like, what the hell, man? You know? But yeah, I truly understand why Rockets fans would be confident going into this one. I truly understand why Lakers fans think that they have a puncher's chance. And it all really starts with LeBron, you know, and LeBron in this setting with everybody telling him he has no chance here. That would make me a little nervous if I was rooting for Houston.
It's a really weird, well, just really quickly, you mentioned the rookie of the year race. I like Colin Knoebel. I think he's had a good year with the Hornets. If he wins rookie of the year, I think we've lost the plot. Like, I think we've just completely lost the plot of what this is about. Cooper Flagg has been incredible, monster, lived up to everything that the number one pick, I think, should be. But again, I understand Khan's advanced numbers are what they are. I mean, this is going to be a very interesting series. I think this is one of the few times that the Lakers are the higher seed but have none of the pressure to win. It's a really strange situation, right? I'm not even sure if LeBron's been in that situation before where he's the team with the higher seed, but his team has no pressure. The Rockets, that's all on them. Like, this is, Lakers are without their first and second high usage offensive players. They are not seen to win this series at all. This is all Houston. Can you not trip over your own feet in this series? And my bet is they will. Like, that is what they've shown all season. You mentioned Ime's kind of reluctance to play, you know, is how much he likes Reed Sheppard. I think part of this, and this is one of my reasonings, is Reed Sheppard and Alperen Sengun just aren't playable together defensively. That is why Ime plays Reed Sheppard the way he is. And I think Ime is going to be forced to play more defensive type players like Tari Eason, Josh Okogie, guys like that. And those are guys the Lakers are just going to live right off of, right? Jake LaRavia had a nice quote today about he's excited to guard Kevin Durant. But the Lakers switch so much, they're going to blitz him so much that there's not going to be a lot of, like, KD's not going to be able to just pick his matchup and play in one-on-one basketball. That is not what the Lakers are about to allow. They're going to dare guys like Dorian, who's actually, Anthony, out of their rotation. I don't know if you've noticed that Dorian Finney-Smith isn't even in
the Rockets. He barely played this year.
I mean, he's healthy now.
He's been hurt all year.
But he's healthy now. Like, he's healthy now. Yeah, not
like you get to a certain point where like there just aren't the reps there, and it's hard for you to like get yourself into the rotation. He's not good enough that you would just write in pen into any rotation, which I think is kind of your point.
Right. And so you have, I think he's going to play, I'm guessing in this series, at least Tari Eason, who's had an awful shooting year. The Lakers are going to dare him to take whatever shots he wants.
Especially Josh recently.
Oof. Yeah. Josh Okogie is going to get whatever shots he wants. And Amen Thompson, that is the X factor in this series to me. How much can he get dribble penetration and just cause havoc? One of the best athletes in the league. But I think he's a guy that also has shown this year, hey, he's not, his decision making isn't at the level yet of where the playoffs are going to force you to be. And that's where I'm really interested. And then like begging for playoff LeBron is very funny to me. Like, that is, I understand the Lakers are the better matchup, but begging for that matchup is a very interesting place to be. And I'm sure LeBron hears everything.
Oh, I see. You sent me that text earlier and I was like, that's all we can beg for, like from our point of view.
Oh, right. I meant from Houston's
and I was like,
perspective.
Wait, what? Like, are you asking for like playoff Luke Kennard? Like, what?
Hey, Luke Kennard is going to be a big part of this series, actually.
Yes.
But yeah, so like all those kind of things go together. And again, Houston can easily come out and just stomp the Lakers. That's a talent advantage that they have. But I think the Lakers are at least going to make them earn it. This doesn't feel like a team that's about to lay down. And they're playing well enough, even without their two offensive guys, that this should be a fun series to me.
Yeah. So like the playoff LeBron thing here is interesting, because the Lakers, you know, really kind of handled and manipulated his season in such a way that, like, to have him available for right now, you know, and now they were doing that so that he could play a very different role when this time came. So, and the role that he's going to have to play in this series is going to, you know, really take a lot more out of him than the other, you know, the role that we saw from him in March. But still, like, think about the number of times that LeBron has been this doubted. And, you know, basically it's all of those series against Golden State, right? And it's specifically the one that he played against Kevin Durant, which, you know, I wish that he and KD would play like a series where they're on like somewhat even footing.
Yeah.
He has to be pretty annoyed by that. But like the you know, the amount of noise that he has heard all year, right? I actually think it's worth it to go through this with LeBron. At the beginning part of the year, he's out and he has sciatica. He doesn't play for like the first third of the season. Mm-hmm. And like right away, right from the onset, even if it wasn't like outwardly said, his own body was putting he felt doubt from his own body that he couldn't even be available for opening night. And right from the get-go, there was like, oh, what kind of season are the Lakers going to get from LeBron? And then while LeBron is out at the onset of the season, partially due to the lighter schedule that the Lakers had at the beginning of the year, Luka came out gangbusters, you know, coming off of a very well-conditioned offseason. Austin looked incredible. And the conversation, you know, stemming from that was, do the Lakers really need LeBron? Like, what is LeBron going to do when he gets back here to that? And then, to make matters even worse, he gets back to the Lakers and they look more pedestrian. They look worse when he was out there, when they were trying the whole your turn, my turn thing, and nobody was really super engaged on defense. So then that noise gets even louder, right? And he gets hurt again. And it's like, oh, great. Here we go. Like, is this it? You know, and then while LeBron is out, once again, the Lakers go back to looking really good. They actually picked up two of their more impressive wins on the season, which spurred a whole nother, you know, helping of that conversation. Is you know, this Lakers team better off without LeBron? Which he promptly shut up by showing up, playing the role that I think he always knew that he needed to with this team. Lakers have the march that they did, and boom, just like that, right when the Lakers turn a corner, he loses the two engines that he was kind of designing his offseason regimen around. And now all of a sudden, all over again, he's being doubted again. And you talked about like him not like being the higher seed and having this little pressure, and that's unique also. But the amount of doubt that has faced LeBron all year, and the number of people that I'm sure he cannot wait to shut up, is like, if I were a Rockets fan, I would be telling people, hey, just quiet, guys.
Yeah,
you know, like how big of a factor do you think that is? Because that's the number one thing I'm looking forward to.
I think it's a lot. A lot of people are saying this is over in four or five, and I find that extremely interesting. And again, it could be. That's the talent discrepancy, but I think LeBron's coming into this, as you said, and it's funny because listening to him talk, of course he wants Luka and Austin healthy. Like, he'd like those two in there because that's the only chance they had at going as far as they did. But you can tell he's kind of gone like, oh, you forgot? Oh, I was playing a role for the team.
Yep.
I was playing the role for the team, right? He talked about this on Mind the Game too. Him and Nash were kind of joking about it. But yeah, I put my game back to be the third option for the team. But make no mistake, like, this is what I do. And I've done it for longer than anyone has ever had. I can still pull this out. He was asked at a post game as well, like, hey, LeBron, how are you adjusting to being the number one option. What did the team need for you from you? Everything. This is just like old times.
To being the number one option,
right? And James. Right, and it was a valid question. It wasn't invalid
at
all.
It is, but it's
and like he's like he's going back to
hey Michael to Jordan. How are you?
Right, this is insane when you put it lay it out like that. But yeah, like he was asking, he's like, it's just back to the old ways. Like I go right back to what I'm comfortable, what I'm used to. And I think you've already seen that they have not lost since losing Luka and Austin, which is kind of nuts to think about. Even with the teams that they played, this team could have easily kind of wallowed in that and, you know, just felt for themselves. But LeBron turned the energy up. I saw it in San Francisco, saw it the other night. Like he has completely come out and said, no, I'm dragging you guys across this finish line. And there was no playing around about that. Did that against Utah, who's not really a real basketball team right now. But in any case, LeBron has stepped up back to the 38-8, super efficient. Jump shot has somehow arrived, you know, at the end of the season. I'm not sure how. He somehow brought the jump shot with him. That was the conversation all year. Hey, will LeBron have a jump shot? It just magically appears at the end of the season, which is so bittersweet to me because that was the whole point of this year was dragging LeBron, not dragging, excuse me, but getting LeBron, this LeBron to this point with the team healthy. But yeah, I think that's the exciting part about this. There's a lot of really other fun matchups as well. There's a lot of cross matches, I believe, in this series. Like Sengun's not going to guard LeBron, but then on the other end, they probably want LeBron in the post against Sengun. It's some really fun mismatches in this one. Both teams have guards that are going to get picked on to hell, and I'm sure they're both scouted for that. Like Reed Sheppard and Luke Kennard are going to be involved in every single screen action. Like you can put that down right now, no matter how this
Luke
game
and
starts.
Reed are looking at each other before, right. Like, you ready? This is probably going to suck.
We're going to be thrown in this car wash. Like we're going to be thrown around.
Luke and Reed. You know how like before the game, everybody's like dapping everybody up, you know, everybody is like the really quick, like, bah, bah, you know, kind of thing. Meanwhile, it's like Luke and Reed are like actually hugging. Like, it's okay, man. This is going to be rough. Let's just get through this.
Kennard's like first time, you know what I mean? Like to reach every.
By the end of the series, they're going to be that like war hero meme that like everything is like zooming out towards. It's just like, oh man. But like in more seriousness, whichever guard can stay on the court the longest by forcing their team to play him, I think that's going to dictate the winner of the series. Like I really think like we'll talk about X factors and cross matchups as well. But I really think when it comes to like individual performances that might go a long way outside of LeBron and outside of Sengun in deciding how the series is going to go, I really think it's Luke Kennard and I think it's Reed Sheppard.
100%. And that's also one of the things I think about. This is how LeBron has played his whole career. Right, Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith, you know, in the title team, KCP, Danny Green. This is how Austin Reeves, you know, this is how he plays. Just guard comes up the screen, we play out of that. That's not really how KD wants to play. And I think you saw that in the two games in Houston, right? The Lakers are like, all right, you want to play, pick your matchup? Go ahead. We're going to trap you at half court, make you make these decisions. And also the trust factor and all that stuff. I think Houston has some of that they're dealing with. But I think that's how LeBron likes to play, and I think you've seen it. It's why he and Luke Kennard look like they played together 10 years, even though he, you know, not met him for the first time. Obviously, he's played against him before, but got to know him as a teammate 3 or 4 months ago because that's just how LeBron plays, and that's also how Luke Kennard plays. I'm interested to see how, you know, the Rockets go through with that as well. But you're right, that's a big part of this as well. Who can kind of stay on the floor? Who has to adjust first, right? JJ now has at least some playoff experience from a year ago. I think he knows that, hey, I can't just go small ball the entire time, right? I got to trust my bigs in this. And I think Jackson's better this year. Ayton's obviously, you know, starting to pick it up, play a little bit better, but that'll be a big part of this too. But yeah, what guards can stay on the floor will decide this. To me, you know, not going to the X factor yet, but Reed Sheppard is extremely vital in this series. Like Amen Thompson's probably a better player overall, but I think Reed is a little bit more important to the things he can do can hurt the Lakers in ways that they don't really have counters for. Like if his pull-up jump shot is going, it's a tough thing for the Lakers to kind of guard against. But for sure, which guard can, you know, stay on the floor. But the Lakers really don't have a choice. Like they don't have a backcourt like the guy after Luke Kennard is probably Bronny. Like I not even like the guy, well, obviously Marcus Smart, but playing a different position. I'm talking about just lead guard. Luke Kennard,
Bronny, but like they technically could just like have Kennard sit and go like Marcus.
Yeah.
And Jake and LeBron and Rui and one of their centers.
Probably, but you're probably cutting it close to 8-9. I have to go through the rotation, but I'm guessing Nick.
Oh, Smith, yeah. It's not ideal. Like, like it's not
right.
That is not what I want. That's not how I want to see this thing go.
Now, I guess my point was like after Kennard, it's Nick Smith Jr., right? Who I think doesn't have much better defensive help than Kennard. Like all these guys are going to be put in different rotations where Kennard's offensive value is just exponentially higher than the guy behind him, even if the defense kind of gets picked on, which it will. The Lakers are going into this knowing that. But yeah, that's I'm super interested in the X's and O's and all the kind of stuff that can go in this series. But you're right. The guard to guard who can stay on the floor is extremely important.
The other one, the other matchup that I'm really kind of interested in is the Rockets' just insane length and athleticism on the wing against the Lakers, I think, tactical advantages. And because the Lakers have been significantly better in the half court all year. And especially after Steven Adams went down, like Steven Adams creating offensive rebounds for the Rockets at the beginning part of the season really kind of inflated their half court and offensive efficiency. Since he hasn't been there, their offense has taken a huge step back. And yet they are just so suffocating defensively with what they can do with ball pressure, with switching, with, you know, like that's one thing that like I kind of think they'll, you know, they would do this anyway, but you know, if they have Amen Thompson on Luke Kennard and they have Jabari Smith on LeBron or Tari Eason on LeBron and the Lakers try to run any of the two-man stuff that LeBron and Kennard have been running, Houston could just switch it. And that that just really changes what the Lakers are going to be doing in those spots. How do you think that matchup, you know, which isn't obviously an individual matchup, but I think it's a very important factor in how the series is going to play out.
Yeah, I mean, Houston's one of the few teams that are top 10, I believe, in both offense and defense. So I think they've been a better defensive team overall this season. But yeah, it's a tough. That's a tough pickup. I think Kennard's interesting because you don't have to just run that. He's one of the, I think he's the only guy on the team because obviously Dalton isn't in the rotation. Kennard's the only guy you can run off ball action for. And I think he's opened up JJ's playbook in meaningful ways to me. If you see the playbook before Kennard got here and after, it feels like he's just added stuff that's helped that. But that's a that's a difficult proposition. I do think LeBron likes the Jabari Smith matchup. Like if that's the guy on him, that he can bully him in a way that he can't Amen Thompson. Now, he has a size advantage over Amen, who's, again, one of the better point-of-attack defenders, but I do think that size advantage, he can kind of take advantage of that a little bit more. Tari Eason, another really good defender. Those are tough decisions. Hopefully, you can run different stuff. If those two are on those guys, then my guess is he goes, all right, you know, whoever's guarding, whoever Alperen Sengun is guarding, we're bringing him up, like forcing him to play consistent, either at the level or drop coverage, you know, defense, and then have... Like, I think it's very important, Anthony, this series, that Ayton is a factor. Like, he is involved, he is engaged, he is getting shots, not just from a let's keep our big man happy, from a that's a place that Houston has to put defensive assets towards. Like, we have to respect Ayton being a mid-range threat, a floater threat, getting to the line. Jackson Hayes as a rim threat, I think, will always be there. Jackson's kind of dependent on the playmaker. Jackson's kind of impact offensively doesn't really change to me game to game. He'll be a lob threat no matter what. But Ayton to me as a short roll guy is super important against drop coverage. The counter is the mid range jump shot, right? That's the shot that's open every time. I think Ayton will be super like important in that way, especially with Rui and Kennard in opposite corners. That's a tough cover with LeBron James orchestrating the offense. I mean, that's what they'll have to do. And Houston's gonna have low scoring games. This is to me gonna be a rock fight. A lot of games like this is. Houston plays an ugly style of basketball, and the Lakers have one elite playmaker. Two, if you count Kennard, I don't know if you do. Kennard's a good playmaker. I don't put him in the elite kind of playmaking class, but Houston doesn't really have an elite playmaker either. Like, it's Kevin Durant as their real playmaker in Reed Sheppard, who has no experience doing it in playoff. Did Reed Sheppard play last year in the playoffs? I don't believe he did. But
yeah. Shingun's pretty good. Like Shingun,
yes, he's their playmaker.
Shingun mm-hmm. does create. That's a good point. The thing, it's so funny, Raj, just as a quick aside, it is 111-108. Miami's up 3.
Okay.
You know who's the leading scorer for Miami in this game?
Is it Andrew Wiggins?
It is.
Wow. 27 points. Wow.
I'm just watching this and I'm like, I feel a lot better if Andrew Wiggins was on the Lakers going into the series, you know.
But
anywho. But yeah, the thing with like the offensive creation factor, right? You talked about how the Rockets don't really have much of it, right? They have it, but it's kind of like when the Rockets looked their best against the Lakers offensively, they were putting Şengün in the short roll, and he was mm-hmm, kind of mm-hmm. downhill and creating from there. That's something that the Lakers are going to have to guard pretty well. I think their switching helps them there. Like they're actually more switchy now without Luka and Austin. So that takes away some of Şengün's creativeness there. Creativity, I guess, is the word for it. English major. For the Lakers, like you kind of hit on this, that LeBron likes the Jabari Smith matchup.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think he also likes the Amen Thompson matchup for a lot of the same reasons. Luka especially loved that matchup, right? For whatever reason, he was just walking him down whenever the two teams played against. Obviously, the Lakers don't have Luka, but I actually think both of these teams, their counters eventually are going to look pretty similar in that, like, I think eventually the Lakers are going to put LeBron in the post, or they're going to put him in the pinch post, or they're going to put him in the short roll and try to get him going downhill. For the Rockets, I think they're going to be looking to do a lot of the same stuff to try to get Şengün going and keep him involved. You mentioned DeAndre Ayton there. Like, it's so funny. The makeup of both of these teams going into the series are both very different, but I actually think they have very similar buttons that they can press here, which makes this, you know, the seven-game run really, really intriguing to kind of dive into.
Yeah, I think, like, there's no, like, people are mentioning to me, well, I mean, what are you going to do about Amen Thompson offensive rebounds? Like, well, you can't take away everything. The Lakers aren't in a position to, you know, be a Oklahoma City-level defense. They have, you know, 5 DPOY guards and 2 of the best rim protector bigs in the league. That's just not the position the Lakers are in. They're in a point where they have to strategically decide, this is what we're willing to live with and what we're willing to die with, right? It's like, hey, if Tari Eason shoots 45% from 3 in this series, let me end the series for you right here. The Rockets are going to win. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Lakers are going to force him, Josh Okogie, even Amen Thompson, right? He's going to get whatever jump shot they want. Go ahead. You're outside the paint. Feel free. Mid-range pull-ups. And that's a shot that Amen can hit respectively at times. But the Lakers are going to live with that. Şengün makes trap blitzing KD more difficult, right? You can't blitz him directly. KD's going to have some shots where you're just going to have to live with one of the best shooters of all time shooting over a contest, whether that's Rui or Laravia or Smart, right? You just fight him as long as you can through the possession and just hope that that's a shot that he hits maybe at 44% instead of the 50 or whatever that he can kind of hit at. That's stuff that you're going to have to live with. But yeah, it's going to be a fun series. I don't know if we're in X-Factor mode yet, but the series is going to live and die with, because I think Houston's going to have very similar answers to your point. And I think Marcus Smart and Jake Laravia are going to be told, hey, let's see if you can shoot. Can you shoot or not? Like, and they're going to be left wide open for a lot of possession. They're not going to, like, Rui and Kennard, I think, had 2 of the best shooting seasons ever for a Laker in history. Those guys are not going to be open very much, right? Maybe when they're both on the court and help comes from here and you get the blender going, as JJ calls it. But for the most part, I think Jake Laravia and Marcus Smart are going to get wide open looks. LeBron's going to have to trust him. He has no choice. Not that he wouldn't, but in this situation, wide open shots are going to be tough to come by. Houston is a solid defense, and they're going to, you know, I think Marcus Smart will take them. Jake Laravia can at times, you know, pass up some shots. He hit more threes going to the playoffs, so hopefully that's a good sign. But those two guys are going to have to shoot confidently, and so that's going to decide a lot of this as well. But wide open shooters, you kind of trust. They go in at a respectable rate, so they can keep defenses honest. Again, Ayton from the mid-range, I'm hoping, get some good looks. And I think Rui and Kennard are going to hit at a enough of a respectable rate that they're going to be defended. If they're open, something went wrong with Houston's defense. So you're going to have to, you know, hope that. And as this is how you are an underdog, right? This is how underdogs win, is that players who aren't expected to hit at a rate shoot over their percentage or a percentage that maybe the other team didn't see. So I think that's a big part of this too.
Is this a Vando series? This is the thing that I keep asking myself over and over and over again, because from a raw athleticism perspective, it makes a whole bunch of sense to play your most athletic guy. But given how difficult creating is going to be for Luke Kennard and for LeBron James in this series, saddling them with one of the worst offensive players that I've ever seen also doesn't make a whole bunch of sense. So like I just don't know what to do here with Vando.
I was just laughing because when you said, is this a Vando series? I'm thinking of JJ going, is this a Vando season? You know, it's just like, is he even a part of this season at
imagine
all?
Imagine they're like coaches meetings and like some poor assistant coach in the back, like, what about Vando? In the score.
I was like, what about him? About that
guy? Yeah.
Oh, man. No, it's tough because, like, I think Bronny's ahead of Vando in the rotation. You know what I mean? And, like, yes, they are different positions, but they serve very similar purposes. Bronny's not told, go run pick and rolls. Bronny's not told, go, you know, run the offense, right? He's in there because, all right, you're an off-ball guard / wing, go defend well, bring the ball up sometimes. But, I mean, Vando can bring the ball up at times as well. But, I think that's just – it's his offense is so harmful to JJ. Now, there's context around, hey, we actually need defenders, and, like, it is helpful to play him. I think JJ's answer would be, like, the defensive gap between him and a guy like LaRavia isn't large enough in the sample that Vando will play. Vando's going to play, what, 10, 12 minutes max. That defensive impact is just not large enough to offset, I guess, the offensive stuff. Now, Jake's not
consistent. Like, there are games where Vando gets out there and he gets a couple of offensive rebounds and he strips the ball a couple of times and he takes a charge and he really kind of bothers some people. But then there are also games that he gets out there and he Travis Knights himself into three fouls in like 37 seconds. And you're like, what the hell, man?
That's like, my point.
That's why Vando hasn't played this year, is even in the thing that he is supposed to be great at, his floor is so low.
Right. Well, that was going to be my point, was what's not inconsistent is Vando comes in at 120 miles per hour. Sometimes the game speed is 75, right? And not that you don't want someone coming in with a burst of energy, but sometimes the game dictates, hey, this is a rock fight right now. Like, and the game is being called a certain way. The refs have, you know, both teams have barked at the refs in ways that you can't come in full court pressure, body bump the opposing team's best guard, best wing, right? The guy that probably has the most respect in that game, and then just pick up two quick, cheap ones. Like, that's the stuff I'm sure they're like, hey, man, we got to be able to expect some kind of ability to read the room. And sometimes, though, it is useful. Like, sometimes you need someone to come in there, man, we're not playing hard enough, or the game's getting away. We just want a baseball term. Like, we want someone to throw in a different pitch, right, or something like that. Like, you just come in and change the energy of the game. I think he can help with there. I don't believe he will be in the just regular playoff rotation. Like, I'd expect – now, I think JJ maybe be incorrect in this, but I think Maxi is ahead of Vando. Like, I would expect Maxi Kleber to get playoff minutes – before Jared Vanderbilt. And
did you see that shot?
I am not watching live.
You're not watching?
No, I'm not.
Wow. I thought you liked basketball.
I do. I'm focused on the lounge, Anthony. Focus on the lounge.
Oh, yeah. Me too. Kobe White. Kobe Bryant. No. He just hit a Kobe shot. Like, nice. Absolutely bananas shot that he just made to tie it up. Miami has the ball with 11 seconds or so to go, but that was a banana shot. Honestly, could have been an M1. Like,
LaMelo, 2 for 15 from three in this game. Wow. That is a nasty. That is a leave it all out there box score. My goodness.
I have never seen a more the dynasty starts after you player than LaMelo Ball.
Like, by the way, yeah,
not saying that they're like heading towards a dynasty. They're always going to be the Hornets, you know. So like their dynasty is like making the playoffs 2 out of 3 times. But man, LaMelo just. There were so many plays in this game, even where like the Charlotte has some momentum. They get a couple of stops, and then he pulls up from like 37 feet. And you're like,
one of my
favorite. I'm probably going to get fried on TikTok for that because he's crazy popular there.
Yeah, whatever. My favorite tweets was LaMelo plays like he's at Chino Hills. Now I say that fondly, like he plays with a level of freedom and just style that usually it's a little bit more controlled in the NBA, but he just plays his style. By the way, Con Knuppel. Putting on, not to judge him off this one game, but just to go off the rookie of the year. This is not the game to showcase 2 for 12, 0 for 6 from three, and he is a game worst -20 in this one. But shout out, now Khan's had a great year, but
I just like when you factor in how difficult a season Cooper Flagg was walking into as a rookie,
it's insane.
Right, he is the face of the return of the Luka Doncic trade, right? Even though, like, we shouldn't even look at him that way because
had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, like it was just dumb luck that he is on their team, but overtime. But nice. Like when you consider they haven't had a point guard for the vast majority of their season, they basically didn't have Anthony Davis, they didn't have Kyrie Irving at all this year. You know, like it was just this skeleton crew of misfit toys that he was being asked to like keep Mavericks fans interested in with. And for him to put up the numbers that he put up at times when he's line item A, B, and C for the opposing defense, like it's cool that Khan hit a bunch of threes on a Hornets team that finished the season in the play-in. Fantastic. Way to go, bud. But like you're absolutely right. Like the if Khan wins it, it's kind of like when like most improved started going to like second overall picks, right? When Ja won
it.
What are we doing? like voters, turn in your vote. Just put this shit in rice. What are we doing?
Didn't Derrick Rose win a most improved too? I think he's like number one pick.
We just got so dumb about it, you know.
By the way,
no player over the last like 5 years has improved more in his time in the league than Austin Reeves, and he's never even been considered.
Not even
he's
close.
Never been in like the conversation for it.
He's jumped too much in the scoring to get it recently. But I just saw the Kobe White shot. That is incredible. That Turner fading 3-pointer to go out of bounds. I want the Hornets in the playoffs. I think, you know, even as much as we've just kind of gone for Cooper Flagg, they've been a top two offense since the All-Star break. A lot of that is their backcourt and LaMelo, as crazy as he does play and plays also, very
well. Shouts to them for going for it and trading for Kobe White, you know.
Yes.
And like, you know, I really like it when I see teams like really try to take that next step forward rather than, you know, punting seasons when you have Luka Doncic in his prime. let's I want to talk about, before we get out of here and before we answer some of these questions from the live audience, I want to talk about DeAndre Ayton. I want to talk about Jackson Hayes. Ayton right now is better, obviously, than Jackson was at this point of last year. Jackson is also better than Jackson was last year. My concern on both fronts is that there is so much athleticism and this game can be sped up so much that we've already seen DeAndre Ayton not respond well against the Houston Rockets. And we have seen Jackson Hayes pretty consistently struggle against this level of athleticism. He looks a lot better when he's one of the better athletes on the court. When he isn't, he looks pretty mediocre. The first question is like, is there anything that the Lakers could do to ensure that those guys are a factor throughout this series?
Yeah. I mean, so the Rockets start Sengun at center. Obviously they lost Steven Adams. Clint Capella comes off the bench for them, but in any case, this should not be a series where the big man like overpowers the center position. Now they're a team that's going to dare, like Ayton likes post seals against wings and things like that. Houston's in a team that's 100% going to live with. Like, they have Amon Thompson, Tari Eason, Josh Okogie. All their offensive faults are they are. These are physical wings, and they're going to dare DeAndre Ayton to shoot jump hooks over him. I think Ayton is good enough and has shown in previous playoffs. I think the last time Ayton was in the playoffs was with Phoenix, if I have that correct. Portland did not play any playoff games, so I believe last time was against was in Phoenix, you know, with the Suns. Yeah. He did show that he can attack those type of mismatches and have success. I'm more concerned, not concerned, but I think Ayton's the one that you have to actively keep involved in the offense in a way that Jackson is just going to do his job. Like, I think Jackson has showed enough that he's going to be a role threat. He's going to, he's going to be a lob threat. He's going to be the guy you can throw lobs, you know, at any time. That's kind of his position. He's gotten better in the short role, but Lakers don't make him make too many decisions in that position. Ayton will get, hopefully he should get chances to score there. I don't think the Lakers can do anything, but I do think keeping Ayton and Jackson to an extent involved in the offense obviously helps the other end too. And I think it's important. Even if you think they're not scoring, let them touch the basketball. Let them be involved. I think it's important they are threats in this series. They're not going to dominate the offensive glass against a team like Houston, but they're going to have to be physical on the inside. I think, to your point, that is important in this series. The amount of the box outs from a guy like Rui, who just had 10 rebounds the other night. Like, I think these guys coming in to help on the glass, that's going to be vital to at least give LeBron a break on that too. You can't have LeBron running all the offense, having the defensive ass that he will, and be, you know, just this rebounding monster. That's not fair to a 41-year-old. Everyone else is going to have to rebound. And the bigs, that's their main job in this one, kind of keeping Houston off the glass, because they crash from the corner more than any other team in the league, I think. Yeah. Amon Thompson, that is what he is elite at. He will come in and fly in for rebounds. You got to kind of keep him off the glass.
I think if Hayes outplays Capella, he's done his job. Right, because Capella's going to get out there. They're going to play roughly the same amount of minutes in the series. And if Hayes can win those minutes, and if he can win that matchup, then I like the series that Hayes had. When Hayes is out there and Şengün is out there, I need Hayes to run the court. I need him to rim run. I need him to get out there and force Şengün to use that much energy to hustle back to try to get back there. And keep up with Hayes. And Hayes is a good enough athlete, I think, to really kind of force Şengün to focus on that.
Şengün also is a player that can get in foul trouble quickly. Like, he's a guy that can pick up two.
Especially if he gets tired, man. Like, he's the same body type as the Luka Jokic guys. When, you know, I have that same body type, and I know if I were to play basketball right now, I'd probably foul like a motherfucker. but yeah, like, you know, with Şengün, get him tired. I think that'll go a long way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, sorry, I cut off your point about him and his foul trouble.
Yeah. So, like, I think he's a guy you can attack and just, you know, I think him picking up two cheap fouls or three, whatever, that is huge. Like, the centers behind him is Clint Capella. We had this whole, I think, narrative versus reality caught up with Clint Capella versus DeAndre Ayton. Yeah, talked about on this show. If you go look at Clint Capella's averaging like 4 points a game, and he got compared to a center that's averaging 14 and 10. But in any case, that's their backup. And I think Houston's in trouble if they have to play Clint Capella 35 minutes a game. Like, they're in trouble. That's not a guy who can stand up to play that many minutes right now. So, I think if you can get Şengün in foul trouble, it's big. KD has a bigger defensive ask now on this team. But that's the guy I'm kind of pointing at. Can you get him foul trouble? Can you throw some lobs to Jackson where he does a little push or a little shove, gets him in trouble? He can also be frustrated with that, like the officials in his mind in a way. But that's important to me, kind of attacking their bigs where you can.
All right, let's dive really quickly into some of you guys' questions and comments here. We did get a super comment, which means we get to play the most important sound on the show. Here's to Alperen Şengün. That's what they need to do. Like, that needs to be him chasing Jackson Hayes all series.
Still don't get it, but sure.
What's not to get?
Like, don't get it. Like, just Kirby walking around. Like, it's...
Right. The actual most important sound on the show. All right, Justin Tindall kicks us off with confident. We play even with Braun on the floor, but when he's off, it's panic stations. But with JJ will play him 44 to 45 minutes. We'll be burnt out even if we win the series. Look, man, there's this thing that happens in pool and it happens in golf, right? Mm-hmm. Where in pool, you're always thinking a couple shots ahead, right? So where can right. I make this shot and put the ball in a spot where I now have a shot after that? In golf, right, there's always you're trying to put the ball in the fairway in a spot that gives you a good angle and gives you plenty of green to work with. But then there's also times where you're just like, you know what? I'll deal with whatever shot I have to deal with afterward. I have to make this shot. And right now, like, the Lakers are in that spot here where it's like, I know that there are going to be some tired legs after this series, and I know that the team waiting for you after this series is going to be the fucking San Antonio. No, it's going to be the what's that?
OKC, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be OKC, yeah. And they probably won't be very tired because they're going to be playing against a team that is, currently trying to make it into the play-in. You got to make the shot in front of you, right? LeBron is going to be pretty wiped. But if you make the shot in front of you, then you get Luka potentially. Then you might even get Austin for the second half of that second series. And then you just make do with what you have to make do with.
Two things on this. I was thinking about Steve Kerr's quote where he was asked kind of about the playing game minutes. And remember, just the Warriors, I believe, are the 10 seed. So they're in do or die both times. So I think they play in LA. And Steve Kerr said where no player is going to go over like 35 minutes. He said Steph. And so he said, like, in a do or die situation, he's like, Steph Curry, Al Horford, and Porzingis are all limited. And he could have probably not said anything because Al Horford and Porzingis, we don't even assume that they're going to play 40 minutes.
I was like, have they played 40 minutes this, like, in a week this year?
Right. And so I was just thinking how crazy that is. Like, what are you saving them for? Steph Curry, he just played. I understand not wanting to, hurt him further, but just coming out before a playing game, a do or die game, and telling your fan base, hey, yeah, we still have minute restrictions. Is kind of crazy. Yeah, I'm with you on this. This is the same thing I've heard is, hey, Ron, even if we win this series, we have OKC next, so it doesn't matter. It's like that bridge, I was just in San Francisco, went on the Golden Gate Bridge, always a cool experience to do that. That bridge, we will cross when we get there. Bridge, I will not worry about right now. The Lakers are going to go all for this first round. Whatever happens after that happens. But you got to find a way to win this series. They are heavily underdogs. You cannot prepare. You are not in the position the OKC is where they can prepare because of the team they're going to play. As you mentioned, they can kind of be like, all right, let's get this series over with quick so that we can kind of play in the next, so we can kind of rest our guys for the next round. Lakers aren't in that position at all. They are underdogs. They will be they are counted out. They are in the talent deficit in this series. You win the series how you can. And then after that, you look across from you and go, all right, we've got the Thunder and we'll prepare for that when that happens. But right now, yeah, you can't think about that.
Do you see the screen? Is your screen what my screen is right now?
It is. It says technical difficulties. Yeah. That game is over though, right? I think Charlotte is, actually up three. No, 43 seconds left.
No, it's like last possession.
Oh yeah. Come on, Amazon.
Oh, look at Twitter.
Perfect. Just perfect. Perfect.
Unbelievable. They cut off like all local presentation of these games too.
Yeah, I heard that.
For this.
Heard
my,
right.
For technical difficulties. Adam Silver, dude, like just yet another big old dub for Adam Silver.
Can't blame this on Adam.
Looking up at him right now, like, you mother.
Oh man, let me get out of the screen. All right, the game is back. So 26 seconds left. I guess Charlotte scored on that possession that we missed. We missed it. Charlotte did score. They're up.
Oh, good.
Most important possession.
The only thing that would have made this better if they were playing this game on Prime Day, like the only.
Right.
Justin Tindall, today's NBA ball taking 16 three-pointers and made two. Yeah, he just made a two-pointer there to kind of be the dagger. Yeah. That was a travel, but I'm not hating. Man, that was a travel. He took two steps on his left foot.
Man yells at clouds.
I'm just saying. Like,
back in my day, they would call that.
I'm just saying. Like, I'm just glad we were finally able to watch the play.
Right. Oh man!
Also, I can't believe they didn't like hold off. Oh,
oh wow!
Oh my god!
What a shot!
This is unbelievable. The shot making at the ends of these possessions. Unbelievable.
They have to foul though, right? Yeah, they have. Oh, good trap. Okay. Oh.
Oh no.
Oh.
Oh no.
What?
Oh
what?
No.
Oh, he got fouled?
He fouled? Wow. LaMelo.
Why did he had a layup or he had an open backed up for a three-pointer. It worked out, but wow.
LaMelo turns the ball over and then fouls Hero.
What a terrible pass. God. Look at this. Look at him back up to the three-point line, though. Wow.
Ooh, I don't know if that was a foul, though.
I don't know if they have a challenge left. Nope. He's going to the line.
They don't have a challenge? That looked like a... Well, because now Spo's telling him to take a look at that for, like, landing area foul. If I were Spo, I'd be like, don't look at that. Because it looked like he...
I don't think they can remove a call, though, in that position. It would have to be challenged, so I'm guessing. But, yeah, I would just take the three free throws and go.
Yeah.
Wow, what a terrible... Man, they had it locked up. Up five with 23 seconds left and couldn't get the ball across half court. Ooh, made two. Okay.
Are you ahead of me? He's only shot two.
Yeah, he made two. I'm at two. Yeah.
Okay. This is crazy.
Wiggins coming back in. I wonder why Wiggins was out for.
Well, they needed offense. They were down five with.
Right, but you take out Wiggins for offense?
I guess they could have taken out Mitchell. They could have taken out Dibble. But you also needed to turn him over. Yeah, Wiggins should have been in there.
All right, let's
see. Unreal. Let's see what other questions that we have here. Rod 8097, great interview with Ryan. That was fun. Ross, I think you stepped in pretty good. You stood pretty well here. You know, you
right.
Put yourself in a tough spot, or I put you in a tough spot, and you stepped up to the plate. Crazy. Hero knows he got away with one there. Like I definitely think he flopped on that three.
Okay. I didn't see a good replay of it, so I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll show it here.
Gentiles Unite, is Ime Udoka a better coach than JJ? So in following Houston people this year, I would probably say no. Like,
yeah.
The Houston people and people covering that team that I follow have been pretty fed up with Ime Udoka's coaching approach to this team. That said, like, the last time we saw JJ Redick in the playoffs was such an abomination that it's hard for me to say that he is definitely better than anybody in this specific spot going into the playoffs. But Rod's like, would it surprise you after the series to be like, JJ's at least on par with Udoka?
Really quickly, I just saw play. I don't think he got fouled. That looked pretty clean from LaMelo. So, right? That looked like a clean block. I'm not sure. That's a tough way to lose your season. I think JJ's a good coach. Again, the playoffs last year were what they were. I also think like Jackson Hayes last year just was not good enough against Minnesota. Now that doesn't mean you completely remove him, but losing AD, obviously you do that trade every time, but losing AD kills your center rotation. They obviously made a trade for Mark Williams that did not come through. So basically you were stuck with Jackson Hayes, Christian Coloco. I believe Trey Jameson was playoff. I don't 100% remember, but I think Coloco was. But in any case, so he decided to go small ball and it. Oh wow.
Where'd go, LaMelo? Uh oh.
Oh, let's see.
Oh no.
Oh,
oh, they got the block.
Wow. Whew. I was talking during it. Who hit it? LaMelo hit the game winner?
LaMelo. LaMelo.
Wow.
No, it was LaMelo.
It was LaMelo. Okay. I saw Bridges got the block. That's why they were kind of all over him. Okay.
Bridges wow. And their other young guy. They're all young, but yeah. Brandon.
They deserve to be in the playoffs to me, though. They've had the better second half of the season. They've had a real turnaround. You mentioned trading for Coby White. Like I wanted the Hornets over the Miami Heat, who would get the same old, get stomped in the same fashion every single year. They play they're the play-in championship champions. They go into the playoffs every year and just
we're pretty close to this being like the Eric Spoelstra Memorial play-in game.
Yeah, Spoelstra's an amazing coach, but the Heat just continue to do nothing every time, and so they keep.
Did you see the report today? I think it was my buddy, Jake, who was like, Pat Riley wants to trade for a star this summer. And it's like, I feel the same way when I hear about like the Warriors might pair LeBron and Kawhi and Giannis and this summer. And it's like, have some shame. I know that it's Mike Dunleavy and you like have to relay what Mike Dunleavy is saying to you right in that spot. You have to say like, you have to relay what, like, you know, Kirk Lacob and like that group is telling you, but also, do you like can there not be a follow up of like how long have you been having this conversation? You know, as well as like with Pat Riley, you know, report Pat Riley wants to trade for a superstar this summer. He's been in on KD, he's been in on Dame, he's been on Giannis, he's been in on. And not us KD before, I'm sorry, man. You can only play the same song so many times, and eventually, like, you're just a bad DJ.
100%. So shout out the Hornets. They have to win another game, but I would pick them. By the way, Orlando's had a very strange year, and Philly just lost Embiid to appendicitis, which is like again just crazy amount of injuries.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Orlando that they play.
Yeah, so I would pick Charlotte. But to your question about Ime versus JJ, JJ back-to-back 50 wins in his first, 2 years. I think that's not nothing. Again, the playoffs were what they were last year, but he's had a solid year. I think he deserves a lot of credit for how this year went with the injuries that, that piled up. Missing LeBron for the first 14 games. Lakers go 10-4 within that. Obviously lose Luke and lose Austin for a whole month. And they still stay in that 3 seed. In the Western Conference, just I think he's had more of a solid year than you could say. And Ime feels like a coach that like your first 2 years with him are amazing, and then after a while he just gets on the nerves of every person, and not just player but staff and GM, and you could just tell there's a confrontation.
Brown. Like he's like modern Larry Brown. Like Larry Brown would get there and like change the culture, and the first year and a half would be great, and then like. You get to like this, like mid December, you get to like Christmas and everybody's like, he actually put coal in my stocking.
Right. Yeah. So that's to me where it is, not to compare him to another Celtics coach, but like Doc Rivers, I feel like similar ways. First year with Doc is, oh man, this guy, really good at, getting us engaged and motivated. Yeah. And then like after a few years, it's just the same exact situation. Someone tweeted out,
but never his fault.
Right. Well, like, it's funny. Cause they said, he got fired or he quit the same day. He departed the same day he got into the Hall of Fame, which is just perfect. Doc Rivers. It's just right on.
He's His Raj's feed is actually brought to you guys by Amazon. So apologies that Raj is not available. but yeah, I'll go ahead and wrap us up here. Thank you to Raj for popping on. And thank you to all of you guys for chatting alongside us. Make sure you guys are hitting that subscribe button. Make sure you guys are hitting that like button. Turn on notifications for the show. Turn on notifications for YouTube. If you guys are listening to the show in the morning via pod, please hit subscribe wherever you get them, preferably on Odyssey, but anywhere you get them is perfectly fine with me. And yeah, so tomorrow the plan is no Harrison this week. I don't want to go into nothing serious going on there between him and me. Just he's got some stuff that he has to deal with. He is not going to be on the show this week. So I will be doing a mailbag episode tomorrow. Hit me with questions on the iTunes mailbag, and I will get to, I'm sure they are backed up. So I'm going to get to as all of those tomorrow, as well as all of the comments that you guys have over the course of the show. Until then, and until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Raj Sapalu, who's back. Hey, bud. Oh, now you're muted on top of it all. It's still not going. All right. this Amazon connection that Raj has. There he is. I think I heard you there.
Okay. Yeah. Mentioned Doc Rivers and got completely destroyed. So,
I did want to say anything that you wanted to plug before we got you out of here.
Just wrote about Marcus Smart for Silver Screen and Roll. So that's up on his kind of playmaking importance. We didn't really mention that. And then, I'll have a video up on Offside tomorrow and through this week, kind of previewing Lakers Rockets. I'm excited. Playoff game. Playoffs are back. Nice break for the Lakers. So, game one on Saturday.
Yep. All right, everybody. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow.